Joining us on Bottom Line Baseball, Jeff Passan, ESPN Insider. Jeff, it's so great to finally get you on the podcast. You broke the news last night. Jared Kelenic will be making his major league debut with the Seattle Mariners later this week. What was your first reaction to the news to see the Mariners finally bring up Jared Kelenic?
It's about freaking time. Jared Kelenic's the kind of talent who could have been in the big leagues last year. And who, even though it was early, if you had stuck him in the big leagues at the end of 2019, he might have held his own then. He's going to be a star. And I'm really interested to see not just the on-field stuff, because I think that that's just going to play from the get-go. I think he's that good. But his personality, it's big. Like, Jared Kelenic loves him some Jared Kelenic. And the confidence that he has going out there, I think is really going to appeal to Seattle Mariners fans. And it's going to be interesting to see what opposing fans think of him and if he's going to be a polarizing sort of guy because he's pretty outspoken about how good he is. And he actually is that good.
Jeff, you touched on Jared Kelenic. And he was in Tacoma to start the season. How important is it to have minor league baseball back this season for the overall state of the game?
It's just nice to have it back because there's more baseball outside of the 30 teams in MLB. There's more opportunities for fans to go to stadiums. There's development that's been lost internally in organizations for a year plus now that simply is not going to ever come back. And I think is going to demonstrably affect this generation of players. I think it's been brutal that they've had to either play at alternate sites or stay in shape by themselves for the last year. And especially the younger guys, those lower levels are what I'm most excited to see because those are the players who can take the biggest leaps, and getting to see a full minor league season and watch the emergence of particular players to me is one of the great underappreciated joys of baseball.
All right, Jeff, this is a question I think is going to be one that we might have in a year from now, but it seems to me that the overused term three outcome game, right? Strikeout, home run, ground out, whatever, fly out. At what point it seems like the analytics are going to be taking on the fans in that way? The analytics teams, a strikeout is an out. That's what people always talk about. The analytics team don't really care too much. It's all about hitting home runs for right now. But if you're just a fan of the game, strikeouts aren't interesting. I think there's been so many 30 strikeout games on both sides this year. So at what point are we going to start seeing analytics versus just the fan of the game?
I think we're seeing it right now. And here's the problem. Like, I actually like strikeouts in the moment. Like, I enjoy watching a pitcher dominate an individual hitter. I like watching a guy whose stuff is so good that he embarrasses somebody at the plate. But the problem with that is when you get not one, not two, not five, not even 10, but a dozen plus a game consistently every night, the lack of balls in play, the lack of action, the lack of athleticism that players in the field get to display, it becomes problematic. And it feeds into this idea that even though I disagree with the premise that baseball is boring, it's not, but the brand of the game that's being played today is not as good as it can be. And so we're at the point right now where they're internally inside of the game, there is a pushback against, and I'm not even going to say it's against analytics. I think it's against what analytics has wrought and what it's brought upon. And all, listen, analytics, we boogeyman that word. Analytics is nothing more than the use of data to try and get a better understanding of something, whether that's in business, in sports, or otherwise. The consequence of the use of analytics has been the deification of efficiency and the idea that you can get to a particular desirable place faster by doing things a particular way. And in baseball, the way that that's manifested itself is you can get to wins quicker if you prevent balls in play. And so what that does is it incentivizes pitchers to go out and strike guys out because they know if they don't, somebody else will. And if somebody else does, that person's going to get the job that you want. So strikeouts have become this thing that pitchers understand unless they are extraordinarily elite at something else, whether it's Kyle Hendricks with late movement or whether it's a sinker ball or at inducing ground balls, unless they have a skill that's off the charts good otherwise, strikeouts are the easiest path to excellence in Major League Baseball.
Jeff, at the end of the season, the CBA will be up. How important is it for the owners and the players to come to an agreement so we don't have a lockout or a strike?
I mean, I don't want to be covering labor this offseason. So for me, it's very important because I would rather be covering free agency and what's going to be happening on the field next year. I think when it comes down to it, it's going to be a question of what each of the sides really wants. You know, they've had preliminary discussions where they've outlined some of the things that are important to them. And for the players, it's a lot of financial issues. It's a lot of competitive issues. For Major League Baseball, there are certainly financial considerations, but they want, you know, they want leeway to change the game on field and how it's played right now, because I think they recognize that if they don't, this is the sort of thing that could potentially spiral out of control. And so both of them should, and I very purposefully use the word should here, understand that a strike would be absolutely ruinous to baseball right now, that a lockout would be absolutely awful for this game that has so much going for it at this point. But, you know, we're past a quarter century of labor peace right now. And sometimes in order for the game to recalibrate itself, there needs to be something like this where you do have a labor stoppage. I don't believe that in this situation, that would be what's best for the game. But I also don't know what the long-term consequences of that would be, especially if they have something and wind up not missing any games, but just lose days in the offseason. That's the sort of thing where maybe they get their grievances out then and strike a deal before games are set to be played. And, you know, all's well and good when it's all said and done.
When you said spiral out of control, do you mean just a strikeout component or just the quote-unquote slow pace of play?
I meant more with strikeouts, the idea that they've already climbed to the point where you had 1,092 more strikeouts in the month of April than you did base hits, or than you did hits, rather. It's a staggering number, and it's only the sort of thing that's emerged in recent years, and the trajectory that it's on, I don't see it changing anytime soon. I don't see it evening out anytime soon. It's the kind of thing that for a couple decades now has been on an upward trajectory. And at this point, what's going to stop it?
Mm-hmm. Jeff,
you, so talked how can, about, you go ahead, Jackson.
Jeff, you talked about pace of play. What can the MLB do to make sure pace of play continues to be in a positive direction and not be these long, slow out games?
I mean, it's not going in a positive direction. That's the problem. It's been going to a place, even with things like the three batter minimum that was intended to speed things up and not have all the bullpen maneuverings that slow games down. I think a pitch clock at this point is inevitable, and I think it's the right thing to do, because if you have something that artificially is there enforcing this rule that has gotten that much worse over time when it comes to pitchers standing there taking their time on the mound. I mean, honestly, the truth is pitchers brought the pitch clock upon themselves, and they've got nobody to blame but the people that they see in the mirror. And so I think that's one lever. I think there are things that you can do to induce early contact and counts, and that would solve a lot of issues. It's a hard nut to crack, because on one hand, you don't want to stifle offense completely. But we look around the game right now and offense is kind of putrid, and yet the games are still going 3+ hours. So if you're adding offense back in, is that going to make the games go longer? The balance there, much as the balance in so many areas of the sport, is a really difficult thing to strike.
Well, to kind of lighten up the mood a little bit, what's been one of the most exciting things about the game that you love this year in particular?
One of the most exciting things. I mean, seeing Shohei Ohtani go out there and hammer home runs and then throw like the most devastating pitch in baseball, maybe with his splitter, and strike out guys at the rate he is, and just prove himself to be eminently capable on both sides. I marvel at it. It's unlike anything I've ever seen, unlike anything most baseball fans alive today have ever seen, and just a very cool story. And it's a shame that Ohtani and Mike Trout, the best player alive, play for a team that is not representative of their talent.
I think Jason Stark made the best and most interesting comp of Shohei Ohtani. He compared him to a John Carlos Stanton and a Jacob DeGrom in one body.
That feels like a little much. I mean, the exit velocities, they're up there. Nobody's Stantonian, and nobody's Jacob DeGrom. Like Ohtani to me is almost like a reliever in a starter's body. You know, big strikeouts, big walks, tough to hit, doesn't throw a whole lot. I would love to see a Shohei Ohtani who goes like 7 innings and is maybe a little more hittable, but isn't walking, 7 or 8 guys per 9. It's just the walks are too high, and he's been able to work his way around them because the stuff is so good and he induces so many strikeouts. But my idealized version of Shohei Ohtani is dial back the stuff a little bit, but go deeper into games.
Jeff, you talked about teams and the Angels. What team has been the biggest surprise to you, and which team has been the biggest disappointment a month and plus into the season?
I think the biggest disappointment's been the Minnesota Twins. They were, coming into the season looking like they were going to be neck and neck with the Chicago White Sox at the top of the American League Central, and they have stumbled. Byron Buxton is hurt now. It's been a rough start for the Twins, and they have a big hole to dig themselves out of. I would say probably a tie for the most surprising teams, and it happens to be the teams with the two best records in baseball when we're recording this, the San Francisco Giants and the Boston Red Sox. I've appreciated how far Hans Eide, since he went to the Giants, has not torn things down, but has tried to remain competitive as they rebuild. And their system right now is much, much better than people realize. And they're about to be shedding the contracts of Brandon Crawford, potentially Buster Posey. Evan Longoria is getting near the end of his, and they're going to have a lot of money to spend too. This is going to be a Dodgers Giants sport for a while, and that's going to be a fun rivalry to see. And of course the Red Sox, You know, they've done it with a clobbering offense that has scored the most runs in Major League Baseball this season, and their pitching's held up enough. And I worry about their bullpen a little bit, but they're going to be getting Chris Sale back at some point and adding him to this rotation that's been surprisingly stable. The Red Sox definitely have been better than I thought they were going to be.
Will we see a Joey Bart call up this year from the Giants?
I mean, when Buster Posey's playing as well as he is, I'm not sure that there's going to be room for him. I mean, they want to get Joey Bart playing time. And, you know, it's not just Joey Bart, by the way. Patrick Bailey, who they drafted in the first round last year, is really, really good. Like, the Giants have an overwhelming amount of talent in the minor leagues, whether it's Bart or Bailey. Marco Luciano may be the best of them. Kyle Harrison, Elliot Ramos. I mean, they've got a lot of dudes in that organization.
Jeff, our favorite part of the show is the Fast Five Quick Round. It's five quick questions, and you have as much time to expand on them. Are you ready?
All right, I'm going to be quick with them. Let's see it.
First one, who is your favorite follow on Twitter?
I hate everyone on Twitter.
All right, my next question for you is, what is your craziest trade deadline story?
Craziest trade deadline story. Man, there's been a lot of them. You know, the ones that stick out to me are the ones that I don't get. The ones that I have, but I don't have enough confirmation on them. And then Rosenthal gets it and it just murders my soul. So I have nothing but bad memories from the trade deadline. I'm a really positive person today, aren't I? This is fantastic.
Oh man, this is good. The third one, what is one piece of sports memorabilia you don't own that you've always wanted to own?
You know, I got a, like, the baseball cards count?
Yeah.
All right. The Wagner T206. Not just because it's like the most expensive or was for a while the most expensive card, but that was like the card of my childhood. Now, you know what? Probably a 52 Topps Mickey Mantle, actually. Like that may have been even more. Those were, when I was growing up, those were like the two best cards in the world. And I was a big baseball card collector growing up. I still have all my cards. I went through like my best ones a few weeks ago just to see what I actually had. And they're much worse than I remember. I was a shitty
Any
collector.
Bubble gum?
When I was at Yahoo, I bought a box of, I think it was 87 Topps, because those were like wheelhouse cards for me. Mm-hmm. And I tried the gum and it was really awful. I mean, it was really a terrible experience.
Did you ever play Strat-O-Matic?
Never did Strat. No. Oh. My nerdiest baseball indulgence is score sheet. And that is extremely nerdy.
All right, my next one for you is, what is your go-to snack?
I try to eat healthy because I'm old, and if I eat poorly, then I will not be fit for TV. And I, you know, like I have to look at this face every day. That's hard enough. So I would say, what do I eat? See, I stay up really late writing, and in order to get through those nights, I typically eat like, or drink a lot of Diet Mountain Dew, and I will eat like protein snacks. So like, does beef jerky count? Does your family make beef jerky, Jackson?
Yeah, we have part of the Nolan Ryan good, yeah, beef, yes.
Right. I clearly need to order a pack of Nolan Ryan beef jerky just to see how that is.
That's great. And then the last question I have for you, Jeff, is simple. If a 15-year-old kid walked up to Jeff Passan right now and said, "Jeff, baseball is boring to me. I'm never going to watch." What are you saying to that 15-year-old kid?
Go kick rocks, child. part of me it's interesting because part of me feels like I need to be an evangelist for the sport, but another part of me is like, if you're not watching baseball now, you're missing out. Like it's your problem that you're not tuning in to see this amazing game with amazing people who you are going to want to root for and fall in love with. And I can sell you on 1,000 things about baseball, from the individuals to the teams to the experience at the stadium to what it's like knowing that for 162 days and nights a year, you're going to have this friend that pisses you off and that gives you great joy and that confuses you and that stimulates you. And that's how I don't root for a particular team because I personally found fandom to be too hard. Like I have enough stress in my life. I don't need to be sitting there all the time getting angry at a baseball team or at a player who I don't know and never will and don't know what he's going through that may be causing his performance to wax and wane. But what I do know is most people are wired differently than me and they want that and they love that and they embrace it and they should go and chase it because every baseball season is its own little novel. And watching those 162 chapters play out over a daily basis is one of the most, if not the most fulfilling thing you're going to find in sports.
Well, Jeff, we want to say thanks so much for taking the time to come on Bottom Line Baseball this morning. Put yourself over. Where can people follow you on social media and read your work with ESPN?
Twitter at Jeff Passan. I suck at Instagram. I'm trying to get better. I always tell myself I'm going to, and then I never go through with it, but, on Instagram at Jeff Passan as well. And you can find, my written stuff at ESPN.com. And when's this running?
Today.
Okay. Clear your calendars Thursday night, 8:00. On ESPN is Alive, the Drew Robinson story. It's a documentary that I worked on with a brilliant director named Martin Kotabashian and tells the story of Drew Robinson's comeback after his attempted suicide last year. It is riveting stuff and I urge you to watch it. You will thank me afterward because it's that amazing a story.
I can't wait. Thank you, Jeff, for doing this. I appreciate it.
Pleasure's mine, fellas.